Good morning. In the absence of the chair, can I ask for nominations for chair, please?
Thank you. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Performance Review and Scrutiny Committee for Tuesday, the 30th of October. Do we have any apologies, Janet?
Yes. Apologies from Councillors Parry, Johnston, Hardy, Leigh Douglas and Munro.
Well, and the order of business?
As per the agenda.
Thank you. Any members have any declaration of interest they want to make at the moment? If not, I can remind you, you can always make a declaration of interest at the time. And moving on to section 4, the minutes of the previous meeting, which is pages 3 to 10. Are we happy that that's an accurate reflection of the minutes? Can I have someone to propose the minutes, please? Councillor Baird, and a seconder, please. Councillor Cassidy. Do you have any matters arising from the minutes? There was one thing from me. Simon Bain had asked him a question. I can't actually remember what it was about because it was 6 weeks ago. And so Simon Bain got back to me, so... that is that. So moving on to the public reports, 5.1, use and impact of pupil equity funding in session 2017-18, report by Head of Education, pages 11 to 24. Maria, please. Thank you,
Councillor. This report is the purpose of this report is to look at the impact of the pupil equity funding to our schools. Annually, we have received over £2 million for each of our schools. This allocation is based on the number of pupils from P1 to S3, so it does not include S4, 5 and 6 pupils, and it only includes those who are eligible and registered for free school meals, so it doesn't include who is entitled to free school meals, just if they've registered for them. The amount per school varied from 8,400 to 144,000 for some of our bigger schools. In section 2 of the report, it outlines how this, basically how the money has been used for interventions. Also note that there was a survey carried out for all of our schools, and 100% of our schools completed the survey, and that gave us really good information about what the money had been used for, how it had been spent, and what successful interventions had been used. In addition to that, each school is required to produce an action plan, and that action plan is also scrutinised. In addition to that, we also scrutinise it with finance to make sure that procurement is being followed, etc. So that's been a really good move this year towards making sure the PEF is being spent appropriately. You can see that there's a wide range of interventions, and just to say that PEF is allocated fully to our schools, and we do not top slice anything, so our schools and head teachers are empowered to spend the money as they see fit to meet the needs of their community. You'll see that some of the examples given in the report of how this has been spent has been things like homeschool practitioners, and that's a really important move because that means that they're looking at the whole family as a totality, because we know that we can't, they're only in school 20% of the time, so we can't just look at what happens just within school. It has to be engaging the hard-to-reach families, and schools have done that really well, and that's quite a new post for us. It also shows that there's been interventions regarding attendance and exclusions, and our exclusions overall have reduced this year. There's been more differentiation and targeted approaches in our schools so that we try and improve outcomes for our learners, remembering that this is all about closing the attainment and achievement gap. That's the main purpose of this funding. What it's shown this year is, and it shows you in the table, is basically that our learners in SIMD 1 and 2, and that's those who are the most deprived, 9 and 10 is the least deprived. So SIMD 1 and 2, all measures have increased, with the exception of P7, listening and talking. And we've had a really good increase in our SIMD 3 to 8 as well, remembering that in this council, sometimes it's quite difficult to say that SIMD is just one way of saying that what the level of deprivation is, because you will get the forces children who they're in rented accommodation, and it's at SIMD 7. So I think that's important to note as well. It's quite a difference. It doesn't give you necessarily a true picture in terms of the social deprivation that there might exist within this. So what you'll see here is that it's a really positive picture. Schools working with different models of approaches have tried to look at how they're doing within their schools and appropriate interventions where they see fit. The recommendations that were put forward at Cabinet were as follows: to acknowledge and congratulate our school staff and managers for the improvements in attainment, particularly in the CFE levels and particularly in SIND 1 and 2, and note the wide range of interventions adapted and progress made by schools with their use of the pupil equity funding, acknowledge the barriers faced by schools in spending their pupil equity funding, and note that schools will incorporate future PEF plans into their school improvement plans and publish them on their school websites as now required by the Scottish Government. And also the last recommendation is to request a further update in progress via the quarterly reporting cycle. Thank you. Any questions?
Thank you, Muriel. Any questions from the councillors? Councillor Smale.
Yes, obviously we welcome all improvements that can be made in educational attainment. At this stage, in the early stage of this initiative, the output seemed to be, as it were, self-certified by the head teachers. But I wonder if you could reflect on at what stage will the inspectorate actually be able to produce data regarding hard results in terms of attainment later on in the school cycle?
Thank you. I think at the moment, when it was first introduced a year ago, it was a lot of kind of coming to grips with it and getting money directly and how they might use it. And there was a lot of, you know, putting it into what would best suit the needs of the school. What has happened now and what you see from the table of the Curriculum for Excellence results is there has been an impact in attainment. Now, it's very hard, as you know, when you're linking attainment to just one thing. So obviously it's a totality of things, but we have seen an increase. And what I can tell you from having been in lots of our schools and reviewed them and speaking to headteachers and children and staff, that staff are really identifying these pupils really well, so they actually know the pupils that the interventions are working with. They're identified as what we would say is a particular group of children, and that means the interventions have been made there. Now, I have to say some of those interventions is about making access to extracurricular or being part of a sports club that maybe in the past they haven't been able. So that would be some of the softer targets. But as you know, those soft targets raise confidence and get a more positive approach to schools. I think we do have some of the hard evidence in our attainment levels. And certainly when our schools are being inspected, they are looking at PEF and they're looking at the impact on PEF for every pupil that is listed as gaining money for PEF. And that's £1,200 per pupil. It doesn't mean that a school has to spend that £1,200 on that pupil, but it means that there should be some intervention to try and support that child because they've been identified.
Any other questions? No, I would just make a couple of comments. Maria, it's fabulous, you know, the work that's been done, and I think it's really encouraging at looking at how we can do things differently. So this, you know, engaging the homeschool practitioners, you know, it's just creative and doing things differently, and I think you can see there the evidence. Just one thing I would like to ask about the P7 listening and talking. There was a decrease there on the SMID 1 and 2. Do we know why? That it just seems a wee anomaly when the rest of everyone else in that group is doing so well.
You know, to be fair, the figures are, as you can see, quite minimal. So sometimes it's just a small group of children. I have to say, in general, Curriculum for Excellence levels are about teachers' professional judgment. And for listening and talking in particular, we tend to find it's a bit like teachers doing prelims at secondary school. We tend to find that teachers are harsher. So quite often with listening and talking, they're a bit harsher in terms of their grading. What we have done, though, is, and it started last year, was increase the amount of moderation that's going on between schools. So it's a bit about getting the teachers to understand more that listening and talking can be actually assessed throughout the school week and through doing other things. It doesn't have to be done individually. So I think there's just a wee bit of a continued work to do in terms of moderation with our staff. But there has been a lot of input in that, so I would expect that will go to green.
That's lovely, Maria. Thank you very much for that. So no more questions. We're happy to move on to 5.2, Child Poverty Act Scotland 2017 and Council's Approach, report by the Director of Education, Communities and Economy, pages 25 to 50. Mary, please. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. This report outlines the reporting obligations Midlothian Council must undertake to meet the requirements of the Child Poverty Act 2017. Section 2 sets out the background and the reporting requirements, which shows that Midlothian Council must submit a report to the Scottish Government by June 2019. Further in Section 2, we have outlined the actions we are taking to mitigate some of the aspects of child poverty, such as researching the cost of the school day. Maria has already outlined how the schools are using their PEF funding to assist pupils and families, increasing uptake of free school meals, milk and clothing grants, and applying for funding to assist parents and carers back to work. These actions are just the start, and we want to develop more. You can see more examples of the work contained within the appendices in this report. PRS is requested to endorse the recommendation as set out in the report, and happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Mary. Any questions? Councillor Wallace.
Thanks, Convener. A few weeks ago, the Provost accused the Scottish National Party of over-exaggerating the levels of poverty. Well, here we have the numbers laid absolutely bare. The figures are disgraceful and unacceptable. Anybody who can accept this level of poverty must have attended the Michelle Ballantyne's School of Philanthropy. Nearly a quarter of our local children live in poverty, and the Institute of Fiscal Studies are predicting a 50% increase in child poverty within the next couple of years. One of the food banks in Pennycook, we have three by the way, needs £400 a week to feed children during the school holidays. I'm sure Dr. Smith mentioned a figure at the Cabinet meeting of how many children get fed during the school holidays throughout Midlothian. The Scottish Government are doing all they can to mitigate against the cruel and degrading policies of the UK Government. And I would once again like to thank the Scottish Government for its efforts with the very limited powers at its disposal. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Wallace. Councillor Smale.
The fact of the matter is that poverty is a multi-factored affair, and the causes of poverty are very often the collapse of the family structure, the falling out of parents with their children. Very often it is unexpected illness, though it is not the fault of any government at all. The facts in terms of poverty is that in-work earnings are at the most egalitarian level for 30 years, that unemployment is at its lowest level likewise for 30 years. The facts are that the definition of poverty has been changed by the Scottish Government. In these papers, we are not talking about absolute poverty, we're talking about relative poverty. And one of the paradoxes of the recession that followed from 2008 is actually relative inequality got less, because it was generally people further up the scale who found that they were losing their jobs or finding their bonuses and their income cut. So in this complicated subject, I'm happy to have, on a more appropriate occasion, an extensive debate with any of the councillors, but I cannot accept that the fundamental issue of poverty in Scotland is down to the Westminster government, which continues to provide far more per capita, 13% more capita to this country than is enjoyed by other parts of the United Kingdom. If we were to have independence, there would be the most drastic requirement for cuts to spending on the National Health Service and on social support for our good Scottish people. And I would encourage all those to my right to spend a little bit more time with the statistical basis on which this poverty assertion is created. When you talk about poverty, you're talking about relative poverty. You are not talking about absolute poverty. I agree that people have sometimes very unfortunate situations, but we should welcome in our compassionate society the ability of the voluntary sector to help take off the sharper edges of being mortal and living in a society like Scotland, which has a strong communitarian base, and that is the way in which we are going to tackle this problem, quite apart from government subventions and government interventions.
Councillor Wallace, I don't want to go off the subject completely. I don't want to have a debate about independence and...
I just wanted to say, Convener, that to try and say that the government has no hand in poverty levels in this country is absolutely appalling. They bailed out the banks and they made the poor people pay for it. Iceland didn't bail out the banks. They jailed their bankers. There's 250,000 children in Scotland live in poverty. To say that's no poverty, if you're living in poverty, you live in poverty. It's no any measure that they can, as they walk out again, they can't stand that. They should be writing to the government and asking for money to mitigate against the poverty they have created.
Thank you, Councillor Wallace. Mary, I've got a question on page 27. It's about the uptake of free school meals, milk and clothing grants. I'm surprised that, what is the barriers there? Why are people not claiming things that they should be entitled to?
There's actually quite a simple explanation to that, and it's P1 to P3 are entitled to free school meals, so parents don't feel that they need to register. And then when they get to P4, it suddenly hits them that they have to claim for it. And what we're working with just now, because of all GDPR and data protection and all the rest of it, what we're trying to do is link people who claim housing benefit and whatnot to the free school meals so that we can be letting these people know what's going on. But I can't just go automatically and say, go and give me the data. So we've been working with our colleagues across the authority and matching up the data, speaking to schools, making sure that it's on the enrolment forms, and then hopefully our systems eventually will speak to each other. A few other local authorities have got it that you don't need to reapply every year, that if you've got these benefits, you would get it automatically. So we're exploring all of these options, but I think it goes away at the beginning where... P1 to P3, you're entitled to it, so parents don't feel the need to register. And that's your starting point.
Of course, that's such a simple, obvious answer. Yes, thank you for that. Any more questions for this particular report? Then we'll move on to 5.3, Annual Complaints Performance Analysis for Year 2017-18, report by Head of Adult and Social Care, Alison.
Thank you, Chair. This is the first annual report that has been completed for social work complaints. There were changes to the complaint social work handling processes, which were brought through the public service reform. And it brings us in line with the way that complaints need to be handled across the rest of the council in terms of the timeframes and things like that we have. And as I say, this is the first year that we've needed to report annually. And part of the requirements in terms of the change in legislation was around the fact that we needed to do an annual report. Appendix 1 presents our first social work annual complaints performance analysis, and that's for 17-18. And that includes social work complaints, although it's coming from myself as head of adult social care. Includes adult social work, criminal justice social work, and includes children and families in amongst that as well. This is our first year of data, so we've not got that comparative data, but obviously this information will be able to be brought forward in amongst some of that. To meet our obligation in terms of the report, we've been required to assess and report complaints data against a suite of 8 indicators, and these indicators are the focus of that report. The case studies that we've included in that are really part about us being able to show some of the learning, but also give a flavour of the nature of some of the complaints that have come through in terms of the sorts of issues that people have been raising with us through the year. And it'll be a particular interest to see how we've been implementing some of the learning from those complaints in that first year. So really we're asking you as part of that to note the content of our annual complaints performance analysis and to note that this is being processed for publication, as that's one of the obligations that we have in part of the legislation.
Thank you, Alison. Any questions? Councillor Smale.
Yes. How does this template compare to other Scottish local authorities? Is there some sort of best practice liable to arise in the matter of reporting this?
We would think so. I mean, I have to say we got really good support from Claire, who's sitting behind, in terms of doing the complaints report and does a lot of that for our general complaints reporting in the council. We were one of the first ones, I think, to be getting our complaints report out this year. It'll be really good for us to see what else comes out and whether there is benchmarking. But no, we sort of had a bit of a blank sheet this year. So this has been the best interpretation in terms of what we were needing to present. But you're right, I think as we move forward, there may be best practice that comes out, or we may see the way that other local authorities are presenting this information and think that there are better ways of us shaping and sharing this. But no, we're one of the early ones in amongst some of this in terms of doing that.
Thank you. Any other questions or queries? No, happy to move on. Item 5.4, Inspection of Support Service in Cherry Road Resource Centre, report by Head of Adult Health and Social Care, Alison. Again, thank you.
Thank you, Chair. This is a really positive report, and it's a real pleasure to bring this type of report here. So Cherry Road Resource Centre is a service that supports individuals with learning disabilities. It's based in Bonnyrigg, for those of you that haven't necessarily visited, and it does provide support to some of the people with the most complex, both in terms of the level of learning disability and complexity that they have, and also fairly significant physical disabilities, potentially challenging behaviour that's presented, and also we provide a service there for individuals who have learning disability and dementia. So it provides a really complex group of individuals within that service. We were inspected over 3 days, and that inspection was completed in August. There were two key areas that the care inspectorate had looked at, and that was very much about the quality of care and support that we deliver and the quality of management and leadership. And it's a real pleasure to say that we got a 6, which is excellent in terms of the care and support. The care inspectorate very rarely give 6s out, so it's a real testament to the work of the staff in that service and how they're working alongside voluntary sector organisations, families and the individuals to really ensure that we're offering a really good quality of life to the people and a meaningful and enjoyable and positive experience for the people that are supported. Management and leadership likewise are very good that we got on that for a 5. So really we're asking you to note the content and the recommendations that have been provided within the report, note some of the really positive comments that have come back from the users and families who have provided support with that. And although it's not in one of the recommendations, I would also like to suggest that we offer our thanks to the team in terms of the level of hard work that they've put in achieving these grades.
Councillor Wallace.
Thank you, Camilla. I'd like to thank the staff and congratulate them on this absolutely excellent report for the very hard work that they undertake in this Cherry Road place.
Thank you, Councillor Wallace. I would echo that. Alison, it's a fantastic report. It really is, and the staff should rightly be very, very proud of themselves, and please pass on our thanks for some excellent work going on. Any further comments on this paper? No, happy to move on. Thank you. 5.5, Inspection of Mid Lothian Council Health and Social Care SVQ Assessment Centre report. Had Head of Adult Services. Is this you again, Alison? Yeah, you've got all the work today.
Thank you, Chair. We maybe need to work on snappier titles for you for our reports to make them slightly easier, but we'll work on that. So really this report is providing information about the Scottish Qualification Authority inspection of Mid Lothian Council's approved Health and Social Care SVQ Assessment Centre that had taken place. The Health and Social Care SVQ Assessment Centre has responsibility to ensure it provides SVQs for the workforce required by the Scottish Social Services Council. So as you'll be aware, we've got a number of staff across our services that require to be registered, and there are requirements for that registration, which includes the level of qualification that they hold as part of that. So our service actually covers adult and social care, children and families, and parts of early years education, certainly in terms of the delivery of SVQ qualifications to that staff. And as going back to a previous report that I'd said in terms of Chief Social Work Officer report, in terms of that level of commitment, actually having a skilled workforce is one of the biggest things that we can offer in terms of delivering good quality outcomes for people. So it's really important that we have a really skilled workforce in that. As you'll see from the level of detail, they were inspected over a period of time that were inspected both in March and inspected in June were a relatively new SVQ centre, but for both of our inspection visits, the SVQ Assessment Centre received all green in terms of the compliance criteria for all areas in each of the qualifications that were being delivered. So again, we're looking at a really positive report in terms of delivering this. And really we're wanting to recognise the positive inspection reports on the work achieved in the Health and Social Care SVQ Assessment Centre in delivering high quality for qualifications for Middle Lothian Council staff, and to recognise the hard work of the SVQ Assessment Centre, in particular Carol Mackay, who's our SVQ coordinator, who's taken the lead role in this work.
Thank you, Alison. Any comments? Councillor Smale.
Can I welcome the positive outturns here? But just for a second, reflect on the past where we shared this with Borders at some point. As you know, the issue of pooling of councils' functions is back on the agenda again, if it ever left it. I just wondered, did we learn something from our collaboration with Borders? What were the issues there?
I mean, it had worked very positively for a period of time. It was Scottish Borders Council who had taken the decision. It was less around the partnership working with us and more around the fact that they wanted to have a learning and development service that covered across the council rather than just being a social work specific learning and development. So it was something that internally, with a redesign within Scottish Borders Council, that they had taken that decision. In principle, it had worked very effectively for us. We've managed to maintain within the existing budget. We haven't looked to increase any of our spending in amongst some of that, and we've been able to expand early years. Certainly in education has been something relatively new that we've looked at, so we've been delivering that. Within Mid Lothian, we have really continued with that commitment that learning and development for social work and social care staff is imperative to ensuring that we're able to improve outcomes. So we haven't faced that same challenge to look at a council-wide learning and development strategy, which was what had happened within Scottish Borders. But as I say, we've managed that within the budget, and we did explore alternative options for SVQ, and at the point in time that we were looking at it, it was more cost-effective for us to run that service ourselves at this point in time. But as I say, we're looking at different ways of taking that on. We do some of the modern apprenticeship work for NHS Lothian, doing the SVQs for that, the early years. So we're looking at how we can generate income to ensure that that is sustainable going forward.
Councillor Smale.
Yes, so in this case, the Borders were a law unto themselves because they had other structural issues. But if someone was to suggest that this function could be pooled with East Lothian or West Lothian, how would you respond just to that at the conceptual level? I'm not particularly pushing it yet, we're not in a sort of financial mode, but just thinking about the principle.
Certainly we would be open for having those conversations if there was interest from other local authorities. We've seen that the reason it fell apart wasn't because we were working in partnership with another area. There were other issues that had taken that. So with the right commitment from everyone, it makes sense if you have joint managers and funding in amongst some of that. We did also at one point, for part of our learning and development, have a shared post with East Lothian that was looking at Team Teach, which is our physical intervention and how we deal with challenging behaviours. And again, the reason that we now do that on an individual basis is East Lothian didn't want to continue that on a longer term basis. So we've been up for doing work in partnership. It hasn't always necessarily been down to our decision as to why that hasn't continued.
Any other comments? Mary.
Just to add to that, I think what Alison was trying to say is how much it's grown. So in Midlothian, we need to grow our own. We need all of the staff for early years. We need all of our staff for our care homes and looking after the elderly. We're also working with NHS Lothian. Section 2.6 says that. So actually, it's expanded beyond what we've got. So whilst Alison's saying we're open to sharing, you have to bear in mind the amount of work that we're doing and how it's expanded and the amount of training we need to do over the next 3 or 4 years, just as our local authority.
So the suggestion there is we already have critical mass and there wouldn't be material savings if we were to pool with another local authority.
I think it'd be difficult to see how there would be significant savings attached to that, particularly from the SVQ point of view in terms of the work that we're doing. We kind of will recruit staff for the level that we're undertaking at any given time. So I think that any savings would be really minimal in terms of doing that in a different way.
Councillor Alexander.
I just remember when I first came to the council, I was hearing all about how we've got to put all these processes into place and how hard it was going to be. And I just find it so amazing how you have stood up to the mark and produced this lovely report. So thank you. And to the staff.
Councillor Wallace.
That's just exactly what I was going to say. Thanks to the staff for the hard work that obviously they put into to these to their work. And of course it says in the recommendations, in particular, Carol Mackay, the SVQ coordinator. Let's name her.
Absolutely, quite agree. Carol Mackay, very well done. Excellent. Are we quite happy with this paper then? Right, and our next paper, 5.6, Inspection of Midlothian Residential Services for Young People report by Children's Head of Services, Joan Chenin. And we obviously don't have Joan unless, or is it you that's speaking to it, Mary? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. So this report sets out the findings of an unannounced inspection of the Young People's Residential Services carried out in July this year. Section 2.1 and 2.2 outlines the provision in Midlothian, and while Section 2.3 shows areas which the care inspectorate concentrated on, the quality of care and support and the quality of management and leadership, which were both graded as good. Section 2.4 sets out the strengths the inspectors found during their visit, and Section 2.5 sets out where they thought the authority could do better. The report concluded with one requirement regarding the storage and recording of medication, and this has been completed, and two recommendations. One, to ensure locum staff have access to relevant information and regular support and supervision, and the promotion of an anti-bullying ethos. An action plan has been prepared in relation to these recommendations. PRS is requested to endorse the recommendations as set out in the report. Thank you.
Thank you, Mary. Any questions? Councillor Wallace.
Yeah, just once again, convener, to thank the staff, which are, of course can be in very difficult circumstances, and they've been congratulated on getting a good report.
Any other comments, questions? No.